This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what's the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail.
Woo!
And the super athlete-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athlete-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest. Just the light in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host,
the pride of Pennsylvania,
the man who shoots straight and won't steer you wrong,
Johnny Appleseed himself,
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast, the midway into February episode, February 18th. This is dropping. Happy birthday to my dad. It's hard to believe how fast time flies, and we're celebrating another year of my dad's life. I'm thankful for him, and thank you for my family. We've been blessed with a great family and good health and a lot of great cool experiences and stuff, and I'm just thankful and appreciative. But I have to say, though, I don't enjoy the month of February, relatively speaking. It's dreary, it's cold, it's somewhere between late winter, early spring, and it's just not that. It just seems to drag on, especially this year. It's just dragging on. I'm not going to lie, I've been in a little bit of a funk and just trying to get stuff done, trying to balance those things of want to versus have to, and it hasn't been the most enjoyable thing, right? And that's life. And one of the things that I wanted to share with you guys that I thought was so cool is I'm just so blessed and thankful that in those times where things aren't going my way, things aren't looking as bright as I want them to be, I've had people in my life who I can lean on and share that struggle with, and they're uplifting and encouraging to me. And all that to say, you know, sometimes when you're down, it's great when people pick you up, but the times when you're up, what an opportunity it is to help somebody and give a word of encouragement. And I just had that experience this week, and I wanted to share that with you guys. I had a friend of mine that had a conversation with and just, I'm not myself, man. I'm bummed. There's certain things that aren't going right. And he just continued to lift me up in prayer and encouragement. And it was just a simple text message in the morning of encouragement. And that was special to me, and I was so thankful and appreciative to that, and it just made me realize how blessed I am. And you know, nothing, you know, life isn't always glamorous, but I'm lucky to have that, and I know that there's a reason behind that, and it's because there's a Savior in my life, and that is Christ, and I have brothers and sisters in Christ that understand sometimes things aren't glamorous, and with that, the thing that stands out to me is Proverbs 27, I believe in verse 7, when it says, just as iron sharpens iron, so does your brothers and sisters in Christ, and one man sharpens another. And man, that really rang true for me this week. And I just wanted to share that with you guys that, hey, whatever you're going through, whatever you're dealing with in this time of February, like, you can do it. It's okay. Brighter days are coming. God is still God in the highest of highs and even in the lowest of lows in the valleys. And we'll take things one step at a time. You got this. And I share that with you because I feel like as I do this podcast and I get to those moments where what's the point of doing this? Why are we talking about a Pennsylvania woodsman, Pennsylvania outdoors related podcast in the month of February? And it seems down. It's because there's a little bit of a community base behind what we do here. And even though I might not see it on a regular basis, there's a lot of you guys that listen on the regular, and every now and then some new people come from time to time. And you know, you guys sometimes could use a little bit of it. You're looking for similar things I am. You enjoy these outdoor things, and sometimes life is giving you lemons. So, hey, make lemonade. I don't know if I'm making any sense. I don't know if that's ringing true to you. It was just an experience that I had, and I was just thankful, and I wanted to share that with you guys because, hey, I just needed it. And I think that transitions well into this week's episode. This week, I got to have Chris Buckman on the show. Chris and I got to connect, of all things, good old social media, that stinking arch nemesis that I really don't like anymore, got to connect through that. You know, he's a content creator. He's got a collaboration with some other buddies, and they're doing some cool things. And we just have a conversation about keeping things fun and what that has looked like in Chris's life through the lens of hunting, waterfowl hunting, deer hunting. He talks about some of the hunts he had this year, you know, and positives and negatives and the things we learned from that. And I think it's a good episode in just gaining perspective through the lens of Chris, who's, you know, a husband and a father of five and works a pretty stressful job based in, off of what he told me off air. And he carries himself so well with it. And it was a pleasure to have him on the show. And it was a pleasure to meet and connect with Chris. And I think you guys can relate to this. This was an uplifting conversation for me. And just as I've had friends that have uplifted me, and this episode has, you know, been a positive light for me, I hope it does the same to you. And, you know, I hope that there's positive things going on for you. Guys, do me a favor before we listen to this episode and check out our partners that have so graciously supported this channel and been a backbone and a support to us. Radix Hunting. Guys, they're going to a lot of shows. They were just at the Great American Outdoor Show, the Radix Hunting booth. They were also at NWTF, and they're going to be at the Iowa show here coming up in the next few weeks here. So wherever you're at, if you go to any of those shows, make sure you check out Radix. Huntworth. There's still some sales going on at huntworthgear.com. Pretty cool thing. I just got to utilize one of those sales and gift a coat And I chose to gift the Saskatoon Heat Boost coat to one of the guys that was a big role in getting me to go on that Kansas duck hunting trip. And I was appreciative to be invited on that trip, and I wanted to give him a thank you. And he was talking about maybe wanting to upgrade hunting coats, and I chose the Saskatoon Heat Boost one because it's such a versatile coat and it does a really great job in the conditions we had. But there's a lot of great gear at Huntworth Gear. Check them out. Lastly, Little Mountain Outfitters. A lot of really cool things happening at Little Mountain Outfitters. A lot of different bows. They got a lineup of all the Matthews. It seems like that Matthews arc has been a hot topic this past year, so far. But a lot of other gear to check out at Little Mountain Outfitters. And if you go to their website, littlemountainoutfitters.com, if you're not close to Richland, Pennsylvania, and you use the code WOODSMAN10, that's WOODSMAN10, you can save yourself 10% off on your next purchase that you get from Little Mountain. So thanks again for listening to this episode, guys. Hope you have a great week. All right, everybody, Chris Buckman on the show. Chris, thanks for joining us this evening. What is going on?
Man, you see it, dude, just enjoying a little break in the subarctic weather, you know, and getting out there a little bit.
Man, this is the first time in the 10-day that I have seen above freezing the entire time.
Yep.
And yep. I'm not complaining.
It's in the 30s, but, you know, everybody's having that Pennsylvania summer weather right now. You got your shorts and your hoodies on, going out like it's 90, well, right?
It feels it. Like, you can go out with a sweatshirt and you don't need more than that for a short period of time, even if it's just going from house to car.
I was chipping out the compacted ice and snow from the end of my driveway the other day in a hoodie and a t-shirt. I got some looks, but, you know, it's whatever. Let's get it done, right?
Well, Chris, it's a pleasure having you. You know, we got connect over all things just like normal, social media and content creation. And, you know, you're in that space a little bit. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell people a little bit about Chris and a little bit about 3B and all that makes Chris tick, man?
Yeah, for sure, man. So first off, you know, I just want to say thanks for letting me come on your platform. It's a really cool, man. I enjoy listening to your podcast. And that's not just lip service, man. I really do.
Oh, and thank you.
So my name is Chris Bookman. I run a group called 3B Outdoors Club. I founded that with a real good friend of mine. We hit our 10-year anniversary last year.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. That's a big feat nowadays. I mean, you mentioned it, just having somebody stick with you for that long and kind of make some headway. So we started it. You know, I grew up in Maryland. You know, I'm not a native Pennsylvanian. And I grew up in Maryland. If I told you, bro, how I grew up, without any context, or you just read it, you would think I grew up in the 1950s. My dad's a preacher, and we grew up on a family farm for a little while. And when I was in third grade, my dad legitimately got a kit and built us a log cabin in the woods. So I lived in a town called Silver Run, which is like the middle of everything. You know, Baltimore was 30 miles away, Harrisburg, you know, 45 minutes away, Gettysburg, 20 minutes away. I mean, we're on the crossroads of everything, but we were fortunate enough that we lived in the woods and we rode bikes. We played baseball. My dad taught us how to shoot recurve bows. That's what we did. Like, I've never beaten Mario Brothers to this day. I've never sat down and beat it. We didn't play video games. All those memes that you see online, like, we played outside until mom called us in for dinner. That was me and my brother, you know, in the 90s. We were fortunate enough to that my grandfather was a prominent farmer in Northern Maryland. So we grew up hunting and fishing on really good private farmlands. And how we grew up, man, there wasn't turkeys where I lived. In fact, NWTF is real famous for introducing turkeys to my area. They were one of the first really where they brought them in and it took off. But even to this day, like, if I see a turkey, I get so pumped, you know, cause we just didn't have them growing up. We just deer hunted. And what fascinates me with how you guys, and we can get into this later, is like, we didn't grow up with like the camp or like, let's go on a trip or like the big group thing. It was like, here's your tree stand. Here's your lunch. See you at dark. Don't get down. Don't do this. I mean, to this day, I'm in my 40s. And if I get down before dark, I'm like, my dad's going to yell at me. You know, like, that's how we grew up, just deer hunting. About 10 years ago, like I said, we started 3B with some friends of mine with the idea of just trying to build a club and really build on that. And when I moved to PA and started reading some stuff, if you can see behind me, like, I collect vintage stuff and I'm into antiques and history stuff. So I started really researching and getting into like the old hunt clubs of PA and the North, like Midwest, Michigan and Wisconsin, the guys in the Red Woolrich, you know, stuff that really like resonated with me. So I said, how can we, you know, take this digital world and kind of turn it into like a club again? So that's how 3B was started. And that's kind of what we're doing now, man. We don't sell stuff. We give out stickers for free. We just hang out and want to meet people and hang out and high five. And that's what we're about, man. So,
you know, I've been thinking about this a lot where, you know, my podcast, other content out there, you get to a point like, what's your why? Why are you doing this in the first place? And I've had to ask myself that quite a bit. And there's a couple different themes you see out there from one content section to the next. You know, one of the common things is, you know, people want attention. They want to draw and they want to be, you know, social media famous or will be known in the hunting space. And there's some pride behind that. And I mean, I think maybe to some extent, maybe we all get that, but an overwhelming theme that I'm finding more and more when it comes to somebody like yourself and myself is the sense of community. You know, you brought up about not experiencing deer camp, like Pennsylvania is traditionally known for, you know, having these deer camps and these groups and traditions. That sense of community, I think that is a huge driving force behind why some of the pages, content channels and stuff exist. And I always took it for granted. Like I look at, every now and then, if I go on social media, I try to do that minimally, but I look at like Facebook groups. I joined Facebook groups originally thinking like that'd be a great way to meet people. And I learned it's just a lot of people arguing, but there's one thing I find there's a lot of new hunters that use that as a platform to connect with people because there's a lack of community in their immediate bubble with hunting. Yeah. And there's a hunger for that. So is that kind of somewhat of along the lines of 3B and what started for you?
Yeah, it's 100%. You know, again, I mean, we grew up, you know, and I had a family and we went down to the family farm office and that's where we would hang out and have coffee and stuff like that. But, you know, we didn't have the experience of like traveling, and there's people that do that, but that's just so foreign to me. And just, you know, deer hunting is that, you know, land, everybody knows this, public land or private land, it's at a premium. And if you got a good buck locked in or a good spot, you know, I don't care how generous you are, you don't want to share that. Mm-hmm. You know, you may be with your kids or your best bro or whatever like that. But even then, it's a little sting if someone else shoots that deer you've been watching, right? So, you know, it was such a big eye-opening thing to me to get into this community. And then, you know, as we talked further tonight, when I got into like waterfowl hunting, that's what that is. That is a community, you know, and it just started opening my eyes and guys inviting you out and saying, yeah, come over here. This is where we got them all. And all that was just so, you know, part of growing up, I guess, you know, you thought everybody grew up the way you did, but then you start reading and talking to people and, you know, I was that person. I wanted that community. I wanted to build that, you know, how can we high five and hang out and then build it for my kids and my kids' kids and my brother's kids and whoever's kids that we can all hang out with. That's what's rad to me, if that makes sense.
It definitely makes sense. I'm listening to you. You know, when I grew up, I had this just overwhelming drive that I had to prove it to myself that I could go out and achieve things in the sense of kills. I had to make sure that I could, you know, I wanted to fill tags. I wanted to shoot bucks. I wanted to do all this stuff. And as time goes on, the things that influence you change. So, you know, here I am now, and I'm thinking back to how I was 20 years ago versus now. The things that influence the decisions I make around my hobby of the outdoors are different. What is that like for you right now? Like, what do you think in life influences you the most in the decisions you make around the outdoors and hunting?
So just, again, leaving something for my kids. I have kids, and you know I've joked about it. I have a mess of kids. I have five kids, you know, and I have a big family. Just, you know, what drives me now as opposed to, like, me going out and getting the stuff is, you know, to backtrack and tell a story while I'm telling a story. I killed a doe this year. and it was the first deer I've killed for 2 years because I got my kids and I'm trying to get them out and get them on deer and stuff like that. And, you know, I had a doe walk by, a big doe in rifle season, and I took it. And I was so pumped, you know, like I was like, man, I almost forgot what this feels like because I had been so focused and happy to do so with my children. But that's what drives me, is having, leaving some sort of community legacy, you know, building those memories. That's what drives me over, for me, getting the big thing to hang on the wall, or the banded duck, or, you know, the biggest pheasant with the longest tail, or whatever it is, the biggest fish or whatever like that. Just going out and leaving something for my kids and leaving memories that, like, you know, without sounding cheesy, like a Hallmark card, you know, like we're leaving this for them, or those Chevy commercials from the 80s and 90s, you know, that's what drives me now. So
there's definitely something about major events like that. Like getting married for me was a big change. Mm-hmm. Having kids was a big deal. Yeah. And then, you know, there's different stages throughout that. You know, you've got more kids and older kids than I do, so you're at different stages than I am, but it's like, yeah, an incremental phase. And I wouldn't have thought it at the time, but those things in life greatly influence what you do in your hobbies. Yeah. And there's a time in my life where I thought, well, nothing's going to influence this, right? I mean, this is life. This is my world. This is what I do, and everything else is along for the ride. And it's not the case. And it's a learning curve, so to speak. Yeah. But it's a journey. So shifting gears a little bit, you'd brought up, you know, we did a show on your podcast with Tracks and Tackle and Ron. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about your love-hate relationship with deer hunting and how much you've enjoyed waterfowl hunting. Walk me, mm-hmm, through that transition in your exposure to waterfowl hunting, yeah, and taking off with that.
So, again, growing up, we deer hunted. And, you know, I'm the middle kid. I have two brothers and two sisters myself. And I, as a kid, I just went deer hunting because that's what you did, you know. And I wasn't into it as a kid. I was into music and art. And, you know, I liked hunting and going out, and I had success. I killed some does and stuff like that. But, like, you know, it wasn't until I got older that I started to get into it. And again, it was literally like, and it was loving. So I don't mean this in a negative way, but it was like, here's your tree stand. Here's your lunch. Here's whatever. Here's your hot chocolate or coffee, whatever it is. Go sit here. See you at dark. So it was cool. And you can look back, and now as we get older, it's relaxing to sit there. But I don't want to say it wasn't fun, but it wasn't the thing for me. As I got older, I got into these guys that were duck hunting, and it was a total opposite. They weren't blocking spots. They were inviting. They were like, come hang out with us. Let's have fun. Let's get snacks. Let's go here. Let's jump on the boat. And I was just hooked immediately on that. Just, you can talk and laugh, and just the camaraderie. I played sports in high school, so like the locker room kind of mentality on the boat or the blind, it just took off with me, man. And the first couple of times, I mean, I know everybody, you know, and you've done it, I think you just went to Kansas and stuff, but when those birds work in the right way, I mean, your heart gets pumping and stuff. So it just took my heart, man. And I'm just into it full bore. You know, I love every second of it, even when you don't get anything, just being out there on the water. I just love it, man. Every second of it.
And I'm curious, like, when you found that, mm-hmm, new passion, so to speak, in that, mm-hmm, did that in your mind taint the other outdoor experiences you've had, or did it somehow make you appreciate other outdoor experiences more?
So yes to both. I mean, so again, growing up where I just deer hunted, and I still do, I'm fortunate enough to still own some property with my family, I had only hunted like private land. Mm-hmm. So like when you duck hunt a lot, I mean, there is a couple lucky honey holes, but we would go to public land. So it's work, and you got guys down the beach from you, or guys over here from you, or you got to get there at a certain time to sign in to lock in the blind spot, or there's blind drawing. So it really made me appreciate that. And then when you do have success in that type of atmosphere, you know, it pumps you up, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I was lucky enough to get a couple private spots that are cool, but it's still work. And just when you think they got them figured out. I mean, the opposite to it with deer hunting is a deer's senses are out of this world. You know that, like their smell, their hearing, you know, you get a group of does, one of them blows at you, they're all gone. But it's the same with waterfowl. You got, here comes a big group of geese, but that's, you know, 20 sets of eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of them doesn't like something, they're gone. And the guys, again, down the shore have called at them and shot them and stuff. So the success on public land, it really made me appreciate the work that goes into it. Taking it for granted. Yeah, I mean, I took, you know, again, kind of piggybacking off that, you know, hunting on private land. And it's not easy. They're tough. You think this thing's this big. You know, sometimes you got to shoot them three or four times. It's not a deer where you drop it and you watch it run. You go get it in an hour. I mean, they're made to dive underwater. They're made to, and then you can't just, I shot the rifle in. That's, we just grew up rifle hunting. You know, even though we shot bows, I didn't bow hunt a whole lot. You shoot the rifle in once and, oh, I'm good. You know, I'm good the day before Thanksgiving. You got to work on your shooting and shoot clays and stuff. It's a lot of work, man. So, you know, all that stuff, it really is eye-opening.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, let me be the first to just openly express my hate for steel shot. A steel shot mm-hmm. sucks.
Yes, it's the worst.
It's mind-boggling to me. I mean, I understand why we have mm-hmm. steel shot, and I'm appreciative of that. I just can't mm-hmm. believe we have not figured out loads better than steel shot that are yeah. relatively cost-effective, because tungsten is definitely not an option in the waterfowl hunting world.
Mm-mm. And it's expensive, and the bismuth's expensive, and there's guys that'll get it, think they're saving a couple cents because they're reloading it, but it's not. I mean, you know, and it is, like you said, if you go to Rural King or if you go to Walmart and you're reading the feet per second on these things, it's like, I can't believe it, but it's all for a purpose, you know, and those are different things that I struggle with, even though I run this thing and I am law abiding. Some of the rules for some of this stuff, you're like, really? You know?
Yeah.
But I get it all. It's all going to go to a place. I got to be on the up and up.
So you brought up private land versus public mm-hmm. land, and you're coming at it from the waterfowl angle. And, yeah. you know, there's a giant argument and debate in the world of deer hunting in public versus private. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many times, there's so many times I've heard people, like, even when I've shot deer and you talk about, oh, you shoot that on public? What does it matter? Mm-hmm. Where does it matter yeah. where I shot it? I was fortunate enough, like 5 or 6 years ago, I shot a really, really big buck in Pennsylvania. And I had somebody that had the audacity to say something along the lines of, you know, it didn't count because it was on private land. I'm like, it was a chunk of private land that was yeah. small that I owned. And mm-hmm. there was a challenge associated with that. Yeah, I didn't have the same challenges you have on public land, but there was a challenge associated with that. So one of the things I've started to try to do with my own hunting is, whether I'm hunting public or private, I try to set out for a realistic goal that's mm-hmm. attainable but is a challenge. And that's different based on the playing ground that I'm at with deer hunting. So with that logic, does that at all apply in your logic with waterfowl hunting? Or is it just, we're waterfowl hunting wherever we're waterfowl hunting, we're going to make the most of this?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a big thing because, again, and Pennsylvania is very different, but at least where I've waterfowl hunted. I deer hunt in Maryland. I do waterfowl hunt in Maryland a little bit, but Pennsylvania has different laws. Where, for instance, in Maryland, in most places, you have to be a certain amount of feet apart to waterfowl hunt. So if I see you and you got your buddies over here, I forget what the yardage is, but there's a certain yardage I have to be from you. Pennsylvania, a lot of places, doesn't have that.
Right.
So if I know you, I've been watching you or watching your podcast, and I know you go to this lake and you're there every Saturday and you have success, I can go set up right next to you. You know, and be that guy. Now, am I that guy? No. And most people aren't. But there's challenges to that. There's challenges to, you know, it's limited spots. So you got to get out there and beat the guys to the boat ramp at a certain time. And then if a lot of these places that you go are public. So you got guys that are out there fishing. You got guys that are out there kayaking. We've had people just come right through us, and whether they're doing it on purpose or whether just they have the right to enjoy that area too. So, you know, there's pressure no matter where you go. I've had people walk through my stuff on private land, duck hunting or deer hunting.
Well,
you
sure.
know, just guys that just don't care, you know. So I don't know if that answers, does that kind of answer your question? Or did I subvert that a little bit?
No, I think so. It's different. I'm trying to grasp hold of two concepts in
yeah.
my mind. Number one, I'm not much of a waterfowl hunter, so I'm learning in that yeah. sense. But number two, I'm trying to just learn thought and perspective behind the way you approach things. Because
yeah.
we all got a philosophy in what drives us. And, you know, when you face challenges, whether it's in your work schedule or whether it's how you handle adversity when you go to set up on a waterfowl hunt in the morning, there's got to be something that keeps you going and keeps the drive alive, or else it's just going to, you know, the flame becomes a dying ember and it dies off. So what in those situations, in the adversity that you experience, whether it's challenges of fighting over public land or highly pressured stuff, or like, what do you think fuels the flame for you to continue to press on through tough hunting conditions?
That's a good question. Just, I have had success, and I have killed, you know, what most people say, the king of ducks. I've killed canvasbacks on a public lake. You know, I live in York County, 5 minutes from my house. Guys up the street, or guys up the shore, guys out, they landed in our spread. Just knowing that you did everything right, and you got your spread set up, your cover's good, and they just work in. And, you know, that was cool. That's like, that was my brother's like second duck. And that's, you know, it's like the equivalent of, but not. It'd be like if you shot like a 6x6 elk on your first bow hunt, and then you're like, I've never killed a 4-point whitetail, you know. So that's what people strive for. They go to the Eastern Shore of Maryland, they pay lots of money to go shoot these canvasbacks. So we've had success like that, just watching them work in, and why they choose you, you know, over something else. It's just fun, and get your heart pumping. And then there's just simple stuff, you know, just being out there. And it's the same thing whether you're deer hunting or bear hunting or whatever you're hunting, you know, getting out there early, getting on the boat, having your coffee and your snacks, watching the sun come up over the water, whether you have success or not, that's what drives me. Just having that experience, just going out there. And I have teenage sons now, and you know, they're at that point where they can either start doing their own thing and not be wanting to hang out with dad, but that's what they want to do on Saturdays. They want to get up and let's go, dad, let's go here and get our snacks, let's get on the boat. So out of anything, whether it's getting a duck or not, like that's like the raddest thing to me. It's just that that's what my dudes want to, they want to hang out with me.
If you're looking to simplify your food plot system while enhancing the quality of your soil, you need to check out Vitalize Seed Company. Vitalize provides top quality seed blends designed to fit into their 1-2 planting system. The system has been designed to allow highly diverse plant species to grow synergistically, optimizing nutrient uptake and cycling the way God intended. Reduce your inputs, build your soil, and maximize the quality tonnage for the wildlife in your area. Find out more about this system and get your seed at vitalizeseed.com, and be sure to check them out on Instagram and Facebook. Well, and that's, you know, really cool. So my kids are 3 and 5. And you know, at that age, they want to do everything. Like, I was hanging drywall in my basement this past weekend, and my son wanted to help me hang drywall. And I'm like, dude, I don't know how this is going to work that you can help me. Like, hand me some screws. Like, let's do something like that. And that's really challenging sometimes, to like try to keep your kids' entertainment when you're doing work like that. But, you know, I think about that from the side of hunting and stuff. You know, I would love my kids to have that interest and drive to be part of hunting. And so far, they seem interested, but they're 3 and 5. So I'm wondering, what do you think has kept your kids interested in doing the things that you like doing? Like, is that just born, or was it something that happened along the way you think influences that?
I think a little bit of both. I mean, I grew up, and I'm not saying this any way disrespectful, but like, my dad was born in the 50s, was in the army, you know, like very religious. He was my dad. We weren't friends. And I don't mean that in any way disrespectfully, right? Like, we hunted and it was cool to hunt and stuff. And we played catch all the time. We did a lot of cool stuff, but he wasn't like my bro. And again, I do not mean that in all disrespect. Great dad, you know, go to their house every Sunday for dinner, text him. I still kill a deer to this day. I'm 43 years old. He's the first person I text. Hey, I shot a deer, you know. But like, we didn't like hang out. Now, he was very busy with his job and, you know, came to every baseball game and stuff. But he was just dad. He was old school. We had flat tops till we were 13, you know, like, I try to be a little bit more like, you know, they still know where the line is with dad, but like, let's go hang out. We're going here. Let's have some fun. And to me, like, the world, and I'm not trying to get into politics or all this stuff. The world's a dark place. The world, it sucks sometimes. Mm-hmm. You're only a kid once. And to me, being a kid is supposed to be this magical, awesome thing. So if I can make that fun and enjoy time with them as kids or teenagers, like, that's what I'm going to do before the world eventually at some point smacks them in the face. So I'm very conscious about, like, let's go have adventures. Let's go do this. Let's get out there. Let's get up early. You know, I have a rule, you know, my kids, we are religious and go to church and very faith driven and stuff like that. And my wife is real strict, or we don't cut, and the kids don't cuss and say certain things, watch certain things. But when we're hunting in the blind, they know that they can say what they want, and they don't. They keep me in line. You know, I'll say something, they're like, "Dad, what's wrong with you?" But you know, we'll go to Turkey Hill, or we're going to go to Sheets, and it's like, "Guys, I know it's early. You guys can get whatever you want. Dad's got you." You know, and I have one real sensible son that's getting a bottle of water, and he might get beef jerky, and the other one's like, "I'm taking a king size Hershey bar. I'm getting a bag of gummy bears, and I'm getting 3 donuts." You know, and that's cool, man. Like, let's just go. Let's just hang out, you know, and I'm very conscious about, you know, time is limited. Time's a thief. You hear that term all the time. And it's just crazy. I think I've said it before, but my oldest son's going to be 16 tomorrow as we're recording this. And I remember him just coming out when he was 8, 9 years old with us, just a little guy, you know, and it's just a blink of an eye going like that. But I've had so much fun watching him have success and killing deer, killing ducks, killing pheasants, fishing. I mean, it's just the best. It's the best thing in the world. That's what drives me over everything. If I sound cheesy, I'm sorry, but that's what it is, you know?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I don't know if the word is nostalgia or what, but I'm just thinking about that position because, like, my kids are growing fast too. I see mm-hmm. it. I mean, I blinked my eyes a couple of times. I got a kid in school. It's amazing how fast time goes. I'm really looking forward to some of those hunting opportunities. I don't always do a good job of mm-hmm. including them or making it a priority to include them. And I have this back and forth because they're young. They're, you know, 5 and 3, going to be 6 and 4. And, like, when's the right age to get them started? But I want to slow down sometimes. And I still struggle with slowing down because I have all these goals and aspirations I want to achieve on my limited time with hunting. And I feel like that's a tough balance when it comes to passions. When you're so passionate about something, it can blind you. And I'm still experiencing that and fighting that. Is that something that you still you experience at all with hunting?
A little bit. I mean, I'm very, this might tick people off. Like, when I hear people say, "Oh, it's a grind," or "I've been grinding." No, if I got to grind, I don't want to do it. It's supposed to be a fun release for me. Mm-hmm. And I know that you got to put work in and there's things you got to do and I enjoy it. But if it becomes a thing where I'm so frustrated or I'm forcing myself to do it, me personally, I don't want to do it anymore. I just don't, you know? So my kids, taking them out, that's been a huge help for me. And just a drive, just again, hanging out. And, you know, and a great thing without me pushing it on you too much. I mean, one reason why I got into waterfowl is my kids were little when I got into it. So it is such a great thing. You can probably hear them yelling upstairs now. It is such a great thing because you can move around. You can laugh and talk. It's not like sit here, don't move, you know, and really get them out there and involved. I took my girls are 11. I have twin daughters and they've gone out with me before, but we went out this year and we just sat next to the water one morning and we didn't see one thing, you know, and they actually sat still and they were quiet, all camoed up. And I said, "Sorry, girls." And they were like, "Dad, that was awesome. We watched the sun come up over this water. We saw some deer, you know, you let us get the snacks that we wanted." They're like, "That was the coolest thing." And I was like, "All right. Okay. That was cool." You know, like, you know, we get driven on the success part. Okay. We didn't kill a duck or a turkey or a bear, or whatever, deer, you know, but just that moment in time with them, you know, and they still talk about it. They're like, "Dad, remember when we went out? We didn't get anything." And I'm like, "Yeah, you keep telling me that." But, like, you know, but they enjoyed the sunrise and eating donuts next to the water. And I think they got a king size Kit Kat. So,
yeah, it's probably too long ago to ask the generations before me that influenced me, like, where they were at in terms of teaching me and, you know, my cousins mm-hmm. or my friends or whatever to hunt. And that overwhelming, you know, there's a desire to want to be successful. You want to accomplish what you're there for.
Yeah.
But don't know, maybe from my angle, it seems like, myself included, sometimes they get blinded by by the prize and not the process.
Yeah.
So I don't, sometimes I don't know how to fix that. I don't know how to fix the way I think in approaching that and slowing down. And I don't know if that's society driven, if that's just Mitchell. Like, what do you think?
So I think that just comes with being older, you know. I think I don't know if I mentioned on here before we were talking, but I was in a band a long time ago, and that's what I wanted to do. I didn't care if we got famous, but I just wanted to be a touring musician. I was in a death metal band, and whoever's listening to that, it's exactly what you think of when people say death metal. I had long hair, and we toured and played, and that's all I wanted to do. Again, I didn't care about being rich. I just wanted to tour and party and play this music and get out there. And I took it so serious at the time that I didn't enjoy a lot of it. And now looking back 20 some years ago, I'm like, man, I wish that I just would have like enjoyed the moment more. And I did, but you understand what I'm saying? Like,
Absolutely.
I took it so serious that now I'm like, I didn't take in the little things, and I was worried about the business part and trying to get a record deal and the next tour, and we're going to do this. And, you know, I push people away. And, you know, I wish I would have just taken it minute for minute, moment by moment. So again, that's what I do now, you know, and it's as cheesy as you can get, but watching the sun come up, you know, seeing this come in, or seeing a deer over here, or seeing turkeys, I still get so pumped about when I see come in. That's what I really, really enjoy with it. And, you know, really try to drive home. So I guess that's just part of getting older. You just priorities change a little bit. And,
well,
you know,
I'm listening to you talk about your experience you had with the band and how into it you were. And then like when you look back and reflect, like, the message I'm hearing is you had hard lessons that you experienced in that if you could go back in time, you'd possibly change. And we can have that in a lot of aspects of life. I've realized similar things in that, but it's come from hunting. Like, there's been things that I have done that, on one hand, I wouldn't trade for the world, but at the same time, I learned some hard lessons. And it wasn't necessarily like, oh, a deer got away or something like that. No, it was at the expense of, you know, the people that I abused in the process to try to accomplish something, whether that was skipping out on family time to go hunting, whether that was prioritizing me and the decisions I went hunting when I was hunting with people. Like, that's that was a real thing. And it's so painful to say this. I still think, like, as people, we got to go through those experiences or else we're not going to grow. So like you went through something like that through a metal band, right? And maybe those experiences allowed you to appreciate hunting more or whatever. You know, for me, it's been unique to say I've made some mistakes in relationships and hunting and stuff like that. That's made changes in my life, and I've learned from it, and now it's like adapting from that. I don't know if I'm making sense with that or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's, and even now, like, there's times where, you know, as a dad, you tell your kids, slow down, take your time. I messed up big time this year, deer hunting. I went out, Maryland has an early muzzleloader season. So in, like, I don't know if Pennsylvania does, cause I do not deer hunt in Pennsylvania, but like, they have an early muzzleloader season in October around Halloween. And I went out, and I haven't deer hunted much in the last couple of years, trying to get the kids out and just life. So my wife said, hey, go, just get your stuff. And I got so excited. This is where the series of folly started. I didn't take anything but my gun and a sweatshirt and my phone. I didn't bring binoculars or optics. I didn't bring any calls. And this is when the rut started in Maryland, like where I hunted. And I'm literally just sitting up there in a sweatshirt. Okay. So I'm sitting up, and where I deer hunt is at the top of a rolling hill, and there's CRP grass to my left as I'm in the tree stand, and just hard timber oaks and a rolling hilltop on my right. So as I'm out there, I can see that there's a couple small does running around in the CRP grass, and I don't have binoculars. So what do I do? I turn my scope up. I'm not going to shoot one of these, but I turn my scope up, and I'm just watching, right? And they don't come anywhere near me. They're just running around playing. They were really young. I had heard, like everybody does when they deer hunt, I had heard 10,000 squirrels behind me, And I got to the point where I'm like, I'm not turning around again. So I finally heard this one squirrel and I'm like, that's a big squirrel. I turn around and there's not a huge buck, just a beautiful, if you draw a picture or a Pennsylvania Game News cover of a little basket rack buck, comes out to me at 5 yards. Comes out, doesn't see me there, comes out, trots out in the field, does a little jump. He's about 7 yards away. I never turned my scope down. I said, okay, I'm going to put it right on his shoulder. I shoot, bang. He kicks back, runs. I'm watching him. I'm like, he's not going down. He's still running. He's running faster now. And he keeps going. I'm like, crap, what the heck happened? So I get down. Okay, this is where, again, more folly started. I get down. I'm not chasing the buck, but I'm going to see if there's blood or if there's anything on the ground here. Don't see anything. Don't see anything. My brother hears me. He comes up with one of his buddies. We're looking around. I walked about 300 yards. No blood. Literally where I turned around, my brother's buddy goes, I got blood right here. Okay. I had sat my gun down and we're walking. It's starting to get dark. More blood. Okay. The blood's picking up. It's getting the color you want. It's thick. This thing is pouring blood. It's dark now. We got headlights on. I walk up. I say, look, there's eye shining right there. There's that deer right there. My dad joins us and he goes, somebody shoot the deer. It's just standing there. Nobody has a gun. Nobody has a gun. So we back out. We back out, right? Come back the next day. And it was going to get cold that night. We back out and I marked where I was on GPS and trailed it again the next day. And I had shot it too far forward. I said, let me put it on his shoulder and drop it. I should have just aimed another inch or two back behind it. And we just ended up pushing. I saw the deer running the next day. He was running fine. So I say all that, like, as much as I teach my kids or even through 3B, we teach stuff. Take your time, find your spot, aim small, miss small, all this stuff. You know, I just went through this whole series of events and it's like, okay, even old Papa Bear has to learn that the hard way. Right. So that's what life is, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. There's always a slice of humble pie just about when you think you got it figured out, something teaches you. Like, I was shooting my bow really, really well. Like, I didn't shoot as much last year in the off season, but when I was shooting, man, I was shooting good. And take a guess how many things I killed with my bow this year.
I mean, I don't want to put it on the air for you.
you probably could guess it. It was rough, and it wasn't for the lack of opportunity, lack of shots. I just did some bonehead mistakes, and it's. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes it's a humble pie. Like missing, you can't miss the little things, and I think that's easy to do.
Yeah, for sure. So tough lesson. I've seen the deer a couple times. It's out there. I think kind of made me feel better to see it running and also teed off at the same time. But
so what do you got going on for the rest of the cabin fever season before we start to see green up?
Man, I think I told you we're on our podcast. I just bought a fly fishing rod. I'm watching fishing stuff. I'm getting into that. I did have an opportunity and I might do it still. So a guy that I work with manages a tree farm. And they can get in Maryland certain types of crop damage permits to shoot deer, even bucks with crop damage permits. So they're shedding deer. So they want a bunch of these deer dead. I got a little bit of qualms about this time of year shooting them with, fawns and gestation periods and stuff. But I have that opportunity. It's in the back of my head. I might try pheasants one more time up at the game lands before that goes out. But I'm kind of resolved that let's get into fishing season and that's what we're doing. And we're focusing on the podcast and meeting cool people like you and really trying to spread the wings of that. So
when you look to where we're at now, February of 2026, mm-hmm. and you think 5 years, so that would be 2031. If mm-hmm. you had to paint a picture of what you hope to accomplish through 3B and just general outdoor stuff, what would that mm-hmm. look like?
Man, just again, and I'm not, again, this isn't lip service, dude. I mean, one of the coolest things, and you probably experienced it too, is just meeting different people, sharing stories. And some of these guys I've met, we've hooked up and hunted and gotten together. And just like Ron through the podcast I do, he doesn't live far away. So we hang out and take the kids to his house to play with the dogs. Like, that's what I'm looking for. More like in a social media world, how can we bring it back to like connecting? So connecting with people, having some more adventures, and just really kind of kind of bringing back the camaraderie, the old school camaraderie in a modern world. That's what I want.
It's an uphill battle, but you see glimmers of that possibility being a possibility. And, you know, I appreciate the work you put into that, because one of the biggest takeaways that I have from talking with you is, you know, there's nothing wrong with having a passion and drive, but there's also nothing back with saying at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Just enjoy this and have fun.
Yeah. Yep. And I'm, you know, Ron, when him and I first met, he was like, yeah, dude, you know, when we go to cookouts or barbecues, I'm looking for the guy in the real tree hat or the camo shirt. And that's who I'm going to hang out with. And like, that's not me. You know, I might wear a Yeti hat or like something cool sometimes, but like, you know, I'm not like that. I'm about just having fun and having a good time. And I got like an AC/DC shirt on or, you know, something like that. You know, I'm about having a good time. So if we can't have a good time, and I'm not even talking about drinking or partying, I'm just saying like, let's have fun, you know? And, you know, that's what drives me and the kids. That's just what I want to do, man. If it ain't fun, I don't want to do it.
Life's too short to not make it fun.
Yeah, for sure.
Chris, I've enjoyed this conversation greatly. Yeah. And before we let you go, is there anything else you'd like to like put a bug in listeners' ears, whether it's a story, a piece of advice, or just plug what you're doing where people can follow you?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, just find us. We're on Instagram, 3B_outdoor_club. Again, we don't sell anything, man. I'm not trying to get you to come buy merch. Just check it out. Share your pictures. Join the club. I'll send you free stickers. Just hang out, man, and share your stories. I co-host a podcast called Tracks and Tackle. Mitchell's episode just came out a week or two ago. Check that out, you know, and come hang out, man. You know, we teach and host events. I'm just about getting everybody outdoors. That's our slogan, get outdoors. So
get outdoors is one of the most clean, wholesome things you can do.
Yeah, buddy.
Good deal. Chris, thanks again.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
How many discounts does USAA auto insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/auto discounts. Restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th. U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.